radio carrying 24 hours a day, because the one thing that we aim to do here at Radio Pulpit is not just to become a station that you listen to, but to also become a companion for you. You know, someone that you almost like a friend who walks with you as you think out loud. So remember that you can engage with us. If you have any questions or you want to interact with us in any way, our WhatsApp line is open. And remember that the WhatsApp line is exactly the same line is exactly the same line as the Telegram line. So simply use 082-657-2729. That's 082-657-2729. Now, Charles, before we talk to or bring Uazola into the conversation, right? I wanted to ask you, if have you ever found yourself working a 9-to-5 while also trying to pursue a career outside of it, so that your 9-to-5 doesn't necessarily become your identity?
Yes. Yes, I did that. That's how I did my youth pastor work for years. I worked at Radio Pulpit 9-to-5. Obviously, there I did the I Am and I did technical things and all that. And I did my theology studies as well as my practical side of practical ministry. I did outside of that. Outside of 9-to-5 on Sundays, of course. Mm-hmm. And then I actually did something as well. I had 3 income streams at one stage. Would you believe it? I'm a sound engineer. I'm a qualified sound engineer. So I did that as well. And I did that to pay for my theology studies so that I can actually become a pastor.
Oh, wow.
Just saying that makes me exhausted again.
That's exactly the point I wanted to get to. Like, the fact that I'm sure you can remember just how difficult it was. And I'm sure you had moments where you felt like these are scary steps to take. And I should probably just focus on what I'm doing at work, what's bringing in the bread and butter, right? Awesome.
Yes.
So we're right now having a conversation with Uazola, who is a program manager and health strategist in the public health space. He believes in doing what it takes to light up the world for good. Now, there is a very interesting concept which I remember the first time I met him. I noticed that this is a concept that really lights up his world, and it is a concept of cross-pollination. And I'm going to leave it to him to explain what exactly is cross-pollination, because I, for one, I think I've been infected by this concept, and I've been spreading it and sharing it to people as well. Now, he hails from Springs, east of Johannesburg. He is a University of Witwatersrand. Oh my goodness, this is always a tongue twister for me. He graduated at the University of Witwatersrand, or the university that we all refer to as Wits. Now, Uazola, how are you doing tonight?
Given, thanks for having me on your show. So for the listeners that don't understand, I just mean I feel gorgeous, young, determined, and, you know, I'm going to make sure I achieve my dreams by all means necessary. So that's how I'm feeling. I'm feeling very positive, very optimistic about life, you know. So I'm excited. Thanks for having me as a guest.
Oh, man, the pleasure is ours. I'm honestly speaking quite excited to have you here with me today. Now, I wanted to find out from you. So I wanted us to sort of like unwrap you as a person first, right? We've gotten into a synopsis of who you are, what you do, and where you come from as well. But how would you define Uazola? Who is Uazola to you?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question. I think that's a question that a lot of people battle with until
I know exactly what you mean.
Yes.
Okay.
But
let me.
That as it may.
Yeah.
I see myself as a person who's been brought to serve. You know, to really serve people, to help vulnerable, disenfranchised groups, to give the voiceless a voice. I'm in public service. I've been in public service. I've been in local economic development agencies. I believe the brain that I've been given has been given to me to be able to look beyond myself, you know.
Yeah.
If we look at classical economics or capitalism in the strictest sense. It looks a lot at self-interest. And that's why if you look at Friedman Economics, they'll tell you that director's fiduciary duty is just profit maximization.
Yeah.
But that we've seen even last week, that it's unsustainable. You know, it's unsustainable just to look at profit. So I really believe I've been called to serve, to speak for the people who don't have voices, to integrate communities and create shared value. And I think that will probably lead into, you know, the cross-pollination you were speaking about. But I'll just leave it there, like to say who I am in a nutshell. That's what I feel.
Now, that is very awesome. Now, you are a regular guy who comes from Springs, right? And I'm sure that there are guys at Springs who know you as, you know, Azola Siamaz. You know what I mean? And the reason I say that is because I want to make it clear that, you know, as much of an accomplished person as you are, and as you've become, you know, I mean, also in terms of, I'm listening to you now, and I know that there are people listening thinking, no, this person is very savvy, you know, and I want to bring this conversation home. What would you say was it for you, knowing that you grew up in the same area as, you know, there are many people that you can think of back home, and you grew up in the very same environment as them? What would you say was it that led you to be a bit more ambitious than them?
Yeah, I think it's multi-layered. There's a lot of contributing factors. Primarily, I think the environment, the home in which I grew up in, excellence was cultivated from a young age. And for me as an individual, I always wanted to be the best. I'm extremely competitive. Even when I started with academics, it wasn't even that I liked books. It's just I wanted to be the best. Every time I played soccer, I wanted to be the captain. I wanted to be the best. So it really comes back to Greek philosophy, you know, when Aristotle speaks about excellence is not an act, but a habit.
Yeah.
We are what we repeatedly do. So for me, from a very young age, I always wanted to get the star. I even remember in grade one, like I had a teacher called Mrs. Kemery, which I still see at the local Pick and Pay here and there, which is a great moment. But like I always wanted to be the kid who gets the star. I always wanted to be neat. You know, it's just I don't know how to really define it, but it's something that's I've always had a burning desire. But it wasn't only the burning desire. It was also being able to see beyond my environment. I remember telling my mom growing up that I want to go study in a university abroad, you know. I've been blessed enough to do that. And that's the thing, you know, the things we say with our mouths, they come to fruition. So a lot of the things I'm seeing that are happening now in my life, when I look in retrospect, it's things that I actually confessed into the universe, but I didn't only confess it, you know, I made sure that, you know, I followed through. I think a lot of us, what keeps us where we are is that there's really no follow through, you know? That's what I think there's always been that desire to be the best, you know, at everything I do.
So yeah. I want you to just take a moment to paint a picture for us, right? In terms of you and the world, the space that you exist in right now. I remember having a conversation with you. This was probably like literally the moment we met, and you were talking about how you're on a goal to diversify your portfolio. And the reason I feel like this is such an important thing for young people to understand. Let me rather first ask you this. Have you also experienced in other people that when one steps into a 9-to-5, especially if it's a good job, it tends to form part of your identity? Like you don't see yourself beyond that point.
I tend to agree. It happens to a lot of people. And this is part of what I call social architecture. You know, sometimes we have voices of our environment.
I love that.
And we really are regurgitating our actions, our lives is a regurgitation of the voices of our environments. So sometimes a lot of people aren't thinking, you know, I remember when I got to varsity, I studied accounting just because I was a top student, but I didn't like accounting. When I got to varsity, I started understanding who I am. But at that point, I was just thinking thoughts of my environment. And that's what happens. Like you get told, go to university, after you get a degree, get a job. And like in certain cultures, particularly in the black culture, once you have medical aid and you're permanent, you cannot mess this up, which I feel is a fundamental trap if you want to be great and excellent, you know. So a lot of people fall into this trap. And it's also, I think, a lack of also understanding maybe financial literacy, because now people put themselves in a lot of debt to service a lifestyle that they cannot afford. And then once you get that lot of debt, you're locked in. You're locked into that job. You cannot move. You need to stay there. And this is what diversification is. So when you have only one income stream, like a 9-to-5 job, that is a concentration risk. You know, if you were investing in the stock market or equities, securities, that's you've got a concentration risk. All your eggs are in one basket when you bring it into layman's terms. But now, once you say, I've got a 9-to-5, like myself, you know, I'm a speaker. I love speaking at events. I love motivating people. Then you have a second income stream. Maybe you're doing something else. Some people do maybe digital web design, photography, whatever it might be that you're doing on the side, or what is commonly referred as a side hustle. Yes. That is diversifying your risk. So that if something happens, and I think the diversification of risk has become very important in the past 2 years, where we've seen a lot of people get retrenched, as per labor relations, commonly referred to as Section 189 letters. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have received Section 189s and they don't know what to do because all their eggs have been in one basket. And this is, it's a wicked problem, you know, given there's many variable issues. As I said, the voices of your environment, a lack of financial literacy, now being indebted and needing to be in this job. Some people, it's even having offspring, you know, if you've got children, you're less able to move. So it's multi-layered. It would be difficult just to give one blanket statement for this answer.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Now, coming back to when I was saying that, just paint us a picture. So I know that for one, you've already mentioned that you do speaking, right? You're a program manager, and you also do your health strategist as well. Now, apart from these three hats that you're using to currently diversify your portfolio, what other places do you have your hand in?
So currently, I'm actually doing a due diligence. I'm looking into fiber. I'm interested in internet service providers. I believe data costs are exorbitantly expensive in South Africa.
I could not agree with you more.
And the thing is, when we're living in a state like South Africa, which has the highest Gini coefficient, meaning the highest income disparity gap, we are finding ourselves in a situation where data is the ability to move. So there's usually what we call an information gap. Like someone like me who was born, you know, close to the township, you couldn't even argue that I was born in the township. You know, what happens is, compared to someone who's living in the suburbs, is that that person has more access. They've got more access to money. They've got more access to data. You know, so I'm interested in data. Right now, as I said, I believe in creating shared value. So I do believe in making money, but I believe you need to impact the society as well. So current data costs are extremely exorbitant. And I think if we have more ISPs or internet service providers, which are providing more affordable data, particularly in your peri-urban communities, your townships, or your rural and remote areas. Yeah. And that's where the need is. Data cannot be $699 a month. You know, we are increasing inequality in South Africa. And so for me, that's one thing that I'm interested in right now. I'm working tirelessly on it, and I'm hoping to provide data at way cheaper costs to the people.
I'm really looking forward to that. If there's one thing I've been praying for in terms of South Africa, right, I've really, really been praying for our data costs to go down, because I think something else that I'm sure perhaps you share the same sentiment, like being able to access data and access the internet opens so many opportunities.
Exactly.
And this is not just for people in urban areas, but also for people in the rural areas. Like, you could literally run a business that's based in Central America while you're sitting here, Soweto, or you're sitting in KwaZulu-Natal. You know what I mean? Is that one of the things that drive you towards that fiber direction?
No, definitely, definitely. The world is going digital, and I think it's been expedited by, obviously, the coronavirus. We're seeing offices. Facebook has now Facebook Workplace. A lot of offices have moved virtual. I'm working virtually. We're more connected. Mm. And even when COVID ends, like, you know, people are going to realize, particularly companies, when they're looking at their financial statements, they're looking at their overheads, they're going to look at their rent and their infrastructure costs and say, we don't need to have this brick and mortar. You know,
yes.
We don't need to have this brick and mortar. We're going to move online because it's cheaper. It's quicker, you know, and even when you have brick and mortar, there's so many more ancillary costs, like small things like toilet paper. In a company which has 1,000 employees, the amount of savings that companies have been able to make is incredible. So we are moving into the digital world, the digital space. And that's why I believe that's where I need to be operating. And that's where we need to bring more equality. I believe data is the new farming, you know?
That is very interesting. Data is the new farming. That is very interesting. Now, what are your thoughts on, I don't know if you've seen that a lot of people, especially I saw this in the United States, and I've realized that even here at home, a lot of people are beginning to have this attitude, actually. There's been a few people who have left their jobs simply because their companies requested for them to come back and work. And I have a friend who works in the software engineering field. And he was saying that if the company that he currently works for requests, after this, we've gone through this whole lockdown situation, if they request for him to go back to work, he's done. Like, he's just going to leave the company and find a situation that where he can actually work from home and be with his family and still produce the KPIs that the company is looking for. What are your thoughts on that attitude?
So firstly, I believe each to his own. So certain things work for certain people and certain things don't work for other people. And it also is dependent on the nature of work you do. So like someone like me today, I was dealing with a local labor issue at one of the developments in which I am managing. Mm-hmm. And it's a construction site. So technology has not advanced to the stage in which someone like myself can say I can go completely offline because I still need to go on sites. The building needs to be built, you know, I'm still in the property space. So when maybe you're in software engineering, it becomes, as the gentleman you've mentioned as an example, it becomes maybe a little bit easier to say that type of statement, you know, but also, like, I think some people are more productive at home. I've read quite a number of academic articles, particularly in the Harvard Business Review, which is one of my favorite journals, like, to come up with current articles. They mention a lot of productivity has increased. You need to be mindful, given, like, now someone like me, I'll drive an hour to get to work, you know. If there's an accident, maybe it's an hour and a half, 2 hours. That's 2 hours out of my day. And there might be someone who's got road rage. Now I get into a different mood. But whereas when I'm waking up in my own space, and if you love your own space, you know, then you are able to be more productive. But then on the other side of the coin, because I always like to triangulate my arguments and not just focus on, you know, one side of the coin. And this is the cross-pollination again, I suppose. Looking at both left and right. So on the other side, there's people who are having severe anxiety. You know, it's been called cabin fever. Some people are people's persons. They want to see their colleagues. They perform best when they see people. They love getting into new environments. So I think it is always going to be dependent on the individual. That's why I started with each to his own.
I think if it
makes you more productive, go for it.
I see exactly what you mean. You know, as you mentioned that, I'm actually remembering a time when here at work, one of the things I used to look forward to is coming in the morning. The person I'm hosting the show with, Charles, will tell you, one of my favorite things to do early in the morning is to come in the office and then walk past his office, and it'll be smelling of coffee beans, like, you know, fresh morning coffee beans. And then we just sit and have share a cup of coffee and catch up on what's been happening in the country, what's happening in each other's lives. I think that those are some moments that I just would not trade at all. But now, here's what I want to find out from you. I'm starting to love asking this question to almost everyone that we interview on the show. So you're a speaker, mm-hmm. right? Which I know is a profession that has placed you on many different platforms. So I want you to sort of amuse me here. So we're going to have one end of the spectrum, and then we're going to have the very other side of the spectrum. I'd like you to, first of all, share a moment where you believe was like the high point of your career as a speaker. You can choose whichever one to start off with, and then share a moment where you felt like this was a low point, where you felt like, you know what, I almost gave up, but I'm glad I didn't, because I wouldn't have gotten to this high point here.
Sure, that's a very difficult one, but a really high point. Mm-hmm. I was speaking to the mayor of a county in Texas, in Lubbock. So I was afforded an opportunity to go to the U.S. and study there to be a Mandela Washington Fellow for Young African Leaders for the work I had done in healthcare. This was the provision of healthcare services in remote and rural areas. Mm-hmm. So we were a group of young African leaders like all over Africa, and we had an opportunity to go to the mayor of that county, and they wanted someone to speak on behalf of the young African leaders, and I had to speak on behalf of our cohort. And that was really a moment where I could change the narrative, you know, because the narrative of Africa is usually people of hunger, people that need financial aid. So I got up there and I told them that, you know what, I come from a beautiful country. I've been blessed. I have a great life. I don't have a sad story to tell you, you know. So for me, being able to, you know, spread the different touch or textures of what being African is, you know, to the West was just such a beautiful moment, you know, a moment of ownership and a moment of just being able to say that we can define ourselves the way we see ourselves. Africa is not just about hunger and financial aid. There's beauty, there's color, there's people, you know, there's hopes and there's dreams. So I could just change the narrative. That was really the highlight for me. Mm-hmm. And this happened in 2009, one of the best moments of my speaking career. And obviously it was abroad. It was the first time for me being in the US. So that also added, you know, to obviously the making it an auspicious occasion.
Oh, yes.
So a low point. Mm-hmm. a low point, I think. So I started speaking very early. So I don't know if you remember, I'm an iStedford. So when you're in primary school and you need to recite poems. Yes. So I used to recite poems in primary school, and I did public speaking as well as debating. And it has served me quite well. And in university, I joined Toastmasters. But the worst maybe moment was in iStedford. You know, I don't remember the poem particularly because I was a young lad.
Yeah.
However, I forgot my words, and I hadn't garnered the confidence to be able to say, when you forget your words, just carry on. Everyone in the room is rooting for you. So that would probably be my worst moment, you know, in terms of speaking. Since then, it's been quite well. I think the thing is, a lot of people actually, everyone is nervous when they go up and speak. Even
true.
I'm nervous.
Yeah, true.
But I just always remember that no one out there is wanting you to do badly. You know, everyone is actually rooting for you.
That's a very good mindset. Yo, thank you so much for sharing that. Hey, now I want us to get into this. You've been hinting at it and you've been touching on it a little bit. I want to read this quote. I'm actually quoting you here. I am intrigued by the cross-pollination of ideas between left and right brain thinkers who are actively seeking solutions to business problems. So explain this concept of cross-pollination and why it's so important to you.
So the concept is really just, as I mentioned earlier on, it's like if you're doing maybe research, like maybe in your academic studies, when you're looking at validation, how do you validate your arguments? So there's something called triangulation. So looking at both sides of the coin. So an example which I think is pertinent and apt right now, mm-hmm. would be the looting in South Africa. So if you look at the looting, you can argue from the one side as someone who's a property owner that there has been damage to your property. On the other side of the coin is communities which feel disenfranchised, feel vulnerable, and communities which feel that they do not have a material interest or any interest in that property, you know? So for me, I want those two people to sit in one room. So when we look at business that cares, it started off with philanthropy, you know, where people are giving out donations, and then it went to corporate social responsibility. That's now governance and transparency, and where we're seeing King Code as, you know, the authority in the space. But now there's something new called the enlightened shareholder value approach. So creating shared value. So cross-pollination to business problems is like looking at the looting problem and saying, we have a group of people who say we are not benefiting at all from these developments, and people from outside investors are making money off our, you know, communities. And then you have developers who are saying, no, these guys are maybe hooligans or whatever, and they're just looting. So I am interested in having shared value. How do we make those two people meet? How do we mediate? How can we create value for each of them? And that is the enlightened shareholder value approach. And for me, I think that is the only way business can be sustainable. The current capitalism model, which we see all over the world and including South Africa, is just not sustainable. And I think in the past couple of weeks, we've seen how not sustainable it is, because the chickens have come home to roost.
I absolutely agree with you, hey. And you've explained it in a very, very good way. So now, before we say goodbye to you, I'm sure there's probably someone listening and thinking that this sounds like a gentleman who can add value to whatever I'm doing here. So, or if there's anyone who'd even like to get to know more about you, how can the audience connect with you?
So they can maybe connect with me at a.mzekandaba@gmail.com. So it's a.mzekandaba@gmail.com. Say a.mzekandaba@gmail.com. Or alternatively, I do use Instagram. I'm not too big on social media for particular reasons professionally. But I used to do personal training, but that's something that I'm not doing anymore, talking about diversification of your portfolio. So they can also find me at @azola_fit on Instagram, @azola_fit.
Okay, awesome. Azola, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight, eh? I hope you're going to be having a blast of a weekend.
I definitely will. Thank you so much for taking time to invite me onto the show. I always love coming onto Radio Pulpit. I love the work you're doing, and just keep it up. And in Michelle Obama's word, I think we need to be cautiously optimistic. The country has had a difficult past 2 weeks. But as I say, there's always the law of polarity. There's always the negative and the positive. And in this time, we can rebuild together. And that's looking at the positive. And we need to harvest that good. So thank you so much, Given. And thank you to your listeners. Take care.
Awesome. Same to you. Hey. And that was Azola Mzekandaba joining us.